Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News.
Greetings and salutations to you good people of Portland. From high above the studios of the Emerson News Network, looming over the milkpacking district in beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson, and I am alongside Don Taylor, who is, even as I speak these words to you, bearing information about a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
BP's capped well is holding nearly a day into the new fix. Apple will be holding a press conference. And a recall has been issued for romaine lettuce.
Excellent. Have no doubt, my friends, that when this hour concludes, you will be shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when it began. Without further ado, I give you Legion of News.
BP says it's capped off well, appeared to be holding steady Friday morning, almost midway into a white-knuckle waiting period in which engineers watch the pressure gauges for signs of a leak. President Obama says that the well is in progress against the devastating oil spill. He said that the new cap does not, however, mean an end to the crisis.
That'd
be not over.
All right.
We won't be done until we actually
are done.
Know that we've killed the well, and that we have a permanent solution in place. We're moving in that direction, but I don't want us to get too far ahead of ourselves.
You know, if I was a politician, and I am not, I think, to the relief of everyone, I think I would avoid using the phrase permanent solution, in public at this point.
Yeah.
Kind of post-1945, that sort of thing tends to add badly. You know, I'm just saying. All right. So we've killed the well. What does that mean exactly?
So we killed the well?
That's what he said. Didn't
that
what he just said?
That means when
there?
When it's all tapped out.
Is that what it means?
I don't know. I'm just saying that's why I used the word maybe.
Let's listen one more time. There's no need for snarkiness, Dante.
We won't be done until we actually know that we've killed the well and that we have a permanent solution in place. We're moving in that direction, but I don't want us to get too far ahead of ourselves.
This just in, Obama seeks final solution. Newsmakers horrified.
Well, four underwater robots scoured the seafloor, but they also found no signs of new leaks. There was no evidence of a leak in the pipe under the seafloor, and that was one of their main concerns. Results were encouraging 17 hours after the valves were shut to trap oil inside the cap, though the test could last up to 48 hours. In remarks at the White House before leaving for a weekend on the Maine coast, far away from spilled oil, the president said the new cap is at least curbing the spill.
Even if it turns out that we can't keep the containment cap on to completely stop the
oil, somebody's hedging.
It's going to allow us to capture much more oil, and we'll see less oil flowing into the Gulf.
Yeah, all right. So now, well, never mind. I was just going to make some pithy observation, but you know what? Screw it. Doesn't matter.
Well, he also says that Americans should be pleased by the latest effort
to
contain the spill.
I command
be
you to
pleased.
Be pleased.
We are making steady progress, and I think the American people should take some heart in the fact that we're making progress on this front.
If they know what's good for them, or they'll end up in Creedy's black bag.
President Obama also says scientists are continuing to analyze data from the capped well.
New cap is good news. Either we will be able to use it to stop the flow, or we will be able to use it to capture almost all of the oil until the relief well is done.
Well, that sounds impossible. It's not a big sponge, right? Sounds like I'm talking about birth control. It's a cap, not a sponge. It's either going to stop the thing or it's just going to capture all of the oil until we can actually solve it. Well, that doesn't seem possible because that makes it sound like it's a big balloon or something that he's put on there. And if that's the case, why didn't we just do that to begin with?
Are you actually asking me?
No, but here's the thing. This is like yesterday when you were, quote, asking, end quote, those questions about why we haven't yet legalized gay marriage in America, as though I had some sort of an answer for that that wasn't just a thinly veiled slice of personal philosophy. So I guess I'm not really asking you about the mechanics of oil well safety and restoration.
I've seen pictures on the internet of how these things operate. I saw a chart somewhere on CNN that showed a pipe and where a cap is and some ships up and things being collected from other things. And I have to admit that it made no sense to me, and it just made my brain a little spinny.
Yeah, well, I at least you did end that sentence by acknowledging that really you were no more informed when you ended that internet search than when you began.
No, I knew nothing.
All right, excellent. Here's Dawn Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
Apple held a press conference this morning to discuss reception problems with its new iPhone 4 and possible solutions. We do have some results that have occurred with their. They have, you know, the press conference was already held, so it is possible to tell you what was said. What we have here is communications consultant Eric Desenhall saying what it was that phone owners were hoping to hear.
So these are about to be played, and they are entirely outdated sound bites. And this news actually has no demonstrable use or value to anyone, in as much as they impart information. However, they will facilitate a glib and witty dialogue exchange between you and I, which is really what makes them worth their weight in gold.
And it will set the stage for the outcome, so people will know what was expected, and then I will share what they actually got.
So it's like an overture, a preamble. It's an aperitif.
Yes.
All right. This is
an amuse-bouche, if you will.
This is solution or care? What am I playing here?
You're playing care.
All right. This is. I'm sorry.
From a customer's perspective, it really comes down to two things: how does this affect me, and what are you doing about it?
What
That's
about
all
my
people
needs?
Care about.
That really is, and that is the magic of Apple, is that Apple is really good at explaining why something is going to be good for you specifically and making you think, often correctly, by the way, that they have solved some long-standing problem in your life. Usually the problem isn't something they themselves have caused, though, so that's a little extra fill-up on top of this whole thing.
Desenhall also said Apple's loyal customer base should help the company navigate through all the recent bad press.
What's the solution? Is it software? Is it hardware? I think one of the great things Apple has going for them is because there are people who have an evangelical belief in their product, they won't have to work as hard as some. But if there is some sort of technical problem, what's the answer?
So, there we go. So there's that guy talking about that.
Well, our special tech correspondent, Thomas Gill, reports that they're giving free cases to all iPhone 4 owners, and the issue is only affecting 1.7% of users and occurs on all phones of the iPhone size, including many BlackBerries. So apparently it is not a problem that is specific to iPhone 4s, but they are giving people cases to cover that, I guess, to cover that little spot that your thumb covers up where the antenna is, or whatever the problem
is. So is this some sort of a case where the perception of the problem was far greater than the actual extent of the problem? If it was only 1.7, I mean, that's still a lot.
I think people
guess,
got their brand new iPhones. They spent way too much money for them. They expected them to be these special magical boxes that did their laundry and made their lives perfect. And then they went, hey, there's a problem with this. And they got angry.
To be fair, I think they were just expecting to make phone calls. And that part didn't really work.
Have you talked to people who have iPhones? Have you ever talked to them about their iPhones?
No, I try to avoid that at all costs. And don't get me wrong, I am sitting here. We got to get a photo of the studio at some point. We should get a photo of the studio someday when the entire back corner of it isn't taken up with this monolithic obelisk of a refrigerator, about which we will talk later. But I am speaking to you now, and within 12 inches of me here, I got not one, not two, but three different Macs. I am actually sitting here behind three different Apple computers. That's basically what runs this whole outfit. I am speaking to you all sitting behind three different Macs. I got a BlackBerry in my pocket, and right here I have this thing called a Roland Eterol R09, which is a digital audio recorder. So it's not like I'm anti-technology or anything. That being said, you know what it is? It's sort of like I don't know. It's like if you listen to a lot of Slayer, you know, or Motorhead or Venom or something back in the day.
As one does.
Yeah, and you know, you just try not to associate with a lot of other people. You know, like who sort of drench themselves in Slayer a lot, because most of them are unstable and quite a few of them are unnerving. Mm. So it is with Apple. Doesn't matter what kind of, you know, you can be a massive Apple fan, but there's a certain kind of Apple consumer that you don't wish to associate with. It's like being a big fan of Star Trek,
but then you don't necessarily want to hang out with that woman who was on jury duty in the Trekkies movie. You know, maybe you do, maybe you don't. I'm just making the observation. All right, here's Dawn Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
Newly released court documents state a Forest Service worker found Heather Mallory's driver's license, a uniform from the same culinary school she attended, and a woman's skeleton in a duffel bag near Estacada last month. And we talked about this yesterday, and in a report it said that a military-style body bag was found. And in this news piece that I'm looking at here, it actually uses both the term duffel bag and body bag. So I think whoever wrote this piece misunderstood what a body bag is.
Now, you would think so, except that I got this email last night. This is from our good friend, not ironic, but a word like that, named Todd the Corpse. And I got to figure out at some point, I guess it's appropriately named Todd the Corpse. I have to figure out what it is. I know when I'm not supposed to use the word ironic. In other words, I know enough to avoid using it incorrectly most of the time, unless I'm just being sort of higgledy-piggledy with it. I don't care. But I need to figure out exactly what the word is that people are really supposed to use when they actually use ironic. What is that word?
Well, it would depend on the situation. In some cases, it's just amusing. In some cases, it's satirical. In some cases, it's,
So here it would be amusingly enough.
Just because something is wry does not make it ironic.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. I understand that.
Yeah,
I'm
you'd just say amusingly named.
Todd the Corpse.
All right.
So our good friend Todd the Corpse says, "Hey, speaking of the show, I'm finally getting caught up, and you were talking today about buying an army body bag." He says, and he is a Sunday school teacher and a man of God, so he has no reason to lie to us. "I, in fact, did buy an army body bag from a surplus store. I used it to transport all my clothes from California to Iowa and back when I went to college. The best thing was," and if you know Todd, by the way, you know how amusing this is. He says, "The best thing was, since I had all of my other worldly possessions in the back of my," and I'm assuming he means other, as in additional worldly possessions, not otherworldly possessions,
right,
like he had the Ark of the Covenant in the back of his truck.
Did he say otherworldly is one word?
He said, "I flung the body bag on top of the other stuff, which was full of lumpy clothing, so it literally looked like I had a body strapped to the back of my truck. I loved that body bag and had it for years," he says. "The only downside is that it left a nasty green residue on everything that touched its sides. I guess you don't really care much if there's a corpse inside, but it is hard to get it out of your dress clothing, Todd." There you go. And knowing is half the battle, kids. Here's Dawn Taylor, the Legion of News news desk.
Well, Mallory's husband, Brian Cole, pleaded not guilty Wednesday to one count of murder. He was arrested in Idaho after human remains believed to be his wife's were found on June 30th. Mallory vanished on March 8th, 2008. Prosecutors told Cole that authorities... Prosecutors said Cole told authorities that Mallory had vomited several times during the day that she disappeared, and he reported that she was last seen wearing a blue shirt and blue jeans. He later emailed police and told them he noticed one of her Western Culinary Institute uniforms were missing. Shortly afterward, Cole moved out of the apartment, and a neighbor told police Cole loaded a large military-style duffel bag into a vehicle. On June 30th, a U.S. Forest Service worker found a female skeleton inside a military-style body bag down an embankment in a wooded area, in addition to finding a Western Culinary Institute uniform and a wallet containing Mallory's driver's license in the bag. Deputies also discovered men's running pants, a pillowcase, half of a cell phone, sunglasses, a bathrobe, a bent towel rack, a rubber bath toy, and remnants of a bath mat.
And a partridge in a pear tree. Why would you note to the cops that she had vomited several times during the day? That seems like a little bit of a detail that isn't important, unless the manner in which she died would have entailed her, hacking up large amounts of viscous goo or her own internal organs, and you were trying to lay the groundwork for some sort of explanation. I'm not saying he did that, by the way, or that he, in fact, killed her in any fashion that would have involved that.
He may have had some kind of clever plan that involved her dying in the bathroom of poisoning, and then perhaps she didn't quite die quick enough.
Well, and as you noted, his clever plan wasn't actually clever enough to preclude putting all of her possessions into the same container that held her body, allegedly.
All right. And apparently a pair of his own pants.
You might as well just put a note in there saying, "I did it. Me. Here's a photo of me doing it." You are listening to Legion of News right here at PDX.FM. Don't forget, this fine program will be available on iTunes later on today, as well as being archived here at PDX.FM and at legionofnews.com. It is also available on your mobile device at mobile.pdx.fm. rickemerson.fm. Coming up today at 1 o'clock, the Rick Emerson Show storms the airwaves at rickemerson.com, or you can listen to that for the low, low price of just 32 cents a day. And I think it's actually slightly less than that if you do it for a year. It's $6.66 a month, amusingly enough.
Not ironic.
No, not ironic. But it's, you know, it's like 30 cents a day or something. Anyway, coming up later on today, we got the top five good songs from a bad movie. In fact, the top five soundtracks that are better than the movie from, you know, where they come. We will also be talking to Rob and Stacy, the folks who run Secret Aardvark, a company that manufactures Secret Aardvark Habanero Hot Sauce, which is much beloved by folks hither and yon. What else have we got coming up today? We have a Geek Watch coming up today. Monkey Watch we didn't get to yesterday.
Right.
Piles and piles of things. Here is Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
The Reverends Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton are trying to steer attention away from an NAACP resolution condemning racism within the Tea Party movement. Jackson deflected the issue Wednesday during the annual convention of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. Sharpton suggested people should be asking if the Tea Party is trying to change the equation that is going to protect us. The civil rights leaders say the focus should be on jobs and on an upcoming march in Washington. And I do have some audio here of Jesse Jackson. And this apparently this is him ostensibly talking about civil rights
now,
and
did you know
the Tea Party and such.
Were you saying, is this the audio, I haven't heard this, is this the audio you were saying this morning that where he doesn't even really sound like Jesse Jackson at this point?
Well, it's like he's trying to do a Jesse Jackson thing, but either his writers... I think it sounds like his writers didn't show up, and he's just so old and tired he can't think of clever things anymore.
I'm having to ad-lib poorly.
Yeah.
Something orally, sorely.
Yeah, so he tries to do his comparing one thing to something else, doing the plays on words, and it's just awkward and
right.
Not very good.
Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the Reverend Jesse Jackson.
About connecting our...
Hold on.
Connecting
okay.
Our... issue really is not the tea pot, it's the coffee pot. In the coffee pot, there's room for cream and sugar for all of us. It's about connecting our Alabama and connecting that with Appalachia. Issue really...
Is he just saying things... Is he doing like a verbal kint where he just sees things on the wall behind the reporters and...
I love lamp.
It's about Skokie, Illinois, and being orca huge.
It's not,
hello!
It's not about the Tea Party, it's about a shoe that a man with a tie has on.
Kick shag rugs with double-paned windows. I would like a bagel...
It's not the Tea Party, it's the coffee pot.
Right. And in the coffee pot, there's room for both coffee and cream.
That doesn't even work in terms of rhetoric. Rhetoric doesn't always have to make sense, but it has to at least... The thing about well-done rhetoric, and I'm not saying that like I'm a master of the craft or something, is that even if it doesn't really make actual literal sense, it needs to sound on first blush as though it's genius. I think it was Tuesday or Wednesday or something. We had Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week here, and we were playing those Jim Steinman songs. We did the top five Jim Steinman songs, and we were playing that song "Nowhere Fast" from Streets of Fire. And there's that line where it says, "There's nothing wrong with going nowhere, baby. You gotta get away from the past. There's nothing wrong with going nowhere, baby, but you should be going nowhere fast." And it's like, and that means nothing. There's no meaning to that at all.
You're saying we gotta be connecting Arkansas with Appalachia, really? That's the reach we need to make. Is it's like that's just a guy going something else that starts with A. What else starts with A?
If you can just say it though with enough, as Michael Keaton says in the paper, you know, clipboard and a confident wave will get you into any building. Well, saying something with enough panache and delivery, that'll make it all sound very palatable. People go, my God, it is about coffee pots and Appalachia. What a fool I've been all these years. He, however, and I saw the same thing happen with Jackson. I saw it happen when he was on Politically Incorrect. He was on, this is back when Maher was still on ABC. So Jackson was on there for some, they were talking about some issue. And it was considered a big coup because he's a very famous public speaker and so forth, and I guess they've been trying to get him on the show for the longest time. So Mara kept pimping the fact that, and Jesse Jackson will be here tonight, friends and neighbors. And then Jackson came out, and it was the saddest thing. Because I don't care about his politics or his beliefs or whatever. It doesn't matter to me. It is all hucksterism, no matter who is speaking and no matter what side of the aisle they are on. To me, the great thing about J.C. Jackson is just what a great verbal showman he has been for much of his life. So I was really excited, but it was so sad. It was like watching Sinatra come out, like when they did that Rat Pack reunion in 89, where he's squinting and looking down at the teleprompter and going, "Nah, Jilly, I can't read it. No, I don't have anything. All right, well, you people in the front row, you finish the song." And he would just sort of totter off to the side of the stage. Jackson would open his mouth to speak, and he would say, "Bill, the problem that we have here is..." And then people would stop speaking to defer to him. But then it would become painfully awkward that he was going nowhere. He had actually nothing to say. And then they would applaud anyway at the end, because he's Jesse Jackson. It's all very depressing. All right. Here's Dawn Taylor.
Fresh Express has voluntarily recalled certain romaine lettuce salad products because they may be contaminated with E. coli. The recalled lettuce products from the Portland, Oregon-based company have use-by dates of July 8th through July 12th and have an S in the product code. The products were distributed across the country, including Oregon and Washington. There have not been any illnesses reported in association with the recall, but the FDA performed a random test and found traces of the bacteria. So if you have any of the lettuce, you should throw it away.
I think that companies that issue products that end up being tainted with E. coli, which seems to have been a bigger and bigger problem over the last 10 or 15 years than it ever was. I don't remember even hearing, I'm sure it existed, but I remember hearing the phrase E. coli contamination when I was growing up. That is a thing that has just come to the fore since, I don't know, maybe 95 or so. So I think in order to stem the rising tide of E. coli taintings in food, companies who have to issue a recall should have to do it by standing on the top of a mountain and using one of those big sort of long flugelhorn things and doing a whole E. coli thing on nationwide TV, just for our amusement. And because that's sufficiently dumb that I think... Look, I mean, fiscal penalties clearly don't work. The fact that they are in... That they might be killing...
The obvious solution, then.
The fact they might be...
The giant alpine horn.
The fact that they might actually be killing their own consumers doesn't seem to deter them. It's time for a good public shaming. You put on your lederhosen and go blow that thing, jackass.
I think that's a good solution for many ills. Make someone put on lederhosen.
Well, I'm trying to make the world a better place, Don.
A group of manatees looking for love are safe after being stranded in a shallow canal in Miami, Florida. The Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission said that 4 or 5 male manatees were trying to mate with a female in the canal. Water in the canal may have been too dirty for the sea cows to see through properly. Wildlife officials managed to coerce all the manatees to swim out of the shallow area on Monday. The spokesman for the Conservation Commission said it's not uncommon to see several manatees in one place during the summer when mating is most frequent. Last year, 10 manatees appeared on the shores of Lauderdale-by-the-Sea.
And these are, well, okay, it seems like I ought to have something. Manatees are just inherently funny,
yeah.
And so it seems like I ought to have something amusing to say about them or some sort of wry observation, but I realize that I don't. The file marked manatee in my head is completely empty. It's just full of dust and moths. All right, I'll come back to it later. Maybe next week I'll have something on that score. Probably not, but I mean,
yeah,
perhaps.
It's just... There are manatees having apparently some kind of a frisky...
I don't know, and I missed my opening there when you said a group of female manatees. And then probably something sexist and amusing I could have said to the delight of men between the ages of 18 and 34 there, but I don't know what it is. All right, here's Dawn Taylor.
An unusual discovery this week at the World Trade Center site in New York. Workers found the hull of a ship more than 200 years old and probably used as landfill in the early 19th century. Marine historian Norman Brower was called in to take a look.
And this is the ocean-going?
Yes.
All right.
It appears to be an ocean-going vessel, and probably sometime in the 1700s. It's heavily built, very solid frames close together.
And so this is, I'm confused about where they found this exactly. I mean, I know it says at the WCC thing, but I mean, It was underground? Or it was,
yeah, apparently it was used as part of landfill.
Oh, so do you know if they dug it up, or is it like a thing that they spotted with that, whatever it is, that like ground sonar or whatever they used?
Well, it doesn't say here.
Okay, because I wonder
how they found it.
Here's a dumb question.
But they are, you know, excavating and building.
Are they? See, that was going to be my next question.
Yes.
Is that's why I wondered if they'd actually dug it up, or sometimes they'll do that thing where they survey the ground with like a sonar radar thing, and then they get the image, the sonar image of whatever is actually subterranean, and they say, "My God, there's something buried down there."
I believe I've pointed this out before, but it bears repeating sometimes. This is a story that you handed to me. So, and you're asking me if I know more about it.
You were
the one who actually discovered and researched this.
I take it as an article of faith that you know more about everything than I do, though. That's the thing. I sort of take it as read that my knowledge is finite while yours is vast, like the cosmos.
How in the world would you have ever gotten that impression?
I just figured.
I used the phrase, my head got spinny, earlier.
That's true. I guess that would have been a tell. The thing of this story that is freaky to me is that I am unnerved by things that are found in a location where it seems like they ought not be. If you find that's like that whole thing about those ocean liners that are, you know, that bring cars from Japan to the States. And that occasionally there'll be some sort of storm at sea, and like 15, Toyota Camrys will just go off the side of the boat and land at the bottom of the ocean. The idea that there are cars at the bottom of the ocean unnerves me in the deepest way, for reasons that I can't really explain or quantify. And so the reverse of that, the idea that there is in fact a ship buried underneath the World Trade Center, just even saying it out loud, it just freaks me out.
This is like the Black Rock, the giant ship, the slaver ship that came in on the giant tidal wave onto the island on Lost and took like the head of the crocodile statue off.
That explains the posting on my Facebook page yesterday where somebody said, it's the Black Rock.
That explains it.
And I just went, whatever, and I continued browsing. So, all right, so that's a Lost thing. All right.
Yes. Archaeologists like Molly McDonald say finding an old ocean-going relic like this in Manhattan is very rare.
You don't say. Really?
It was something that occasionally, ships were occasionally used as part of landfilling, so it probably was part of filling in this land.
Hey, did they ever explain, so is this the three-toed statue that you're talking about?
Yeah.
All right, so they ever explain why that thing was there?
Not
of course,
really,
no. I was going to say, you
not
know, even
really.
As I asked the question, I realized, no, of course they didn't. It's Lost. Nothing. They never explained anything. All right. Boy, am I. Can I just say, just real quickly, not to deviate us off the whole thing onto a whole separate thing here. Can I tell you, I have never had a moment's regret about pulling the ripcord on that show. Not one. Sometimes you look back and you go, I really wish I'd watched Twin Peaks more, you know, or whatever. You know, you pick a program and go, I think I really missed out by not watching Degrassi, The Next Generation. I don't feel I missed anything by, you know what I missed out on by not watching Lost? I missed out on a whole bunch of stress and stomach-churning anxiety over things that would then never be resolved.
I loved it. I loved Lost. I loved the whole ride. The ending worked. I enjoyed it, and I liked the fact that I got to actually be there from the very beginning all the way through to the end.
It surprises me that you liked it, though, because you strike me as a very linear person in some ways. And that is the very definition of a non-linear program, it seems to me, in that you had a lot of threads that just sort of went off in every direction and then just sort of faded off into the mist without ever being resolved.
That was occasionally very frustrating, because there was very much that thing when you're watching it, you could see the strings, you know, that the writers hadn't thought through something. And we're trying to pull that old Chris Carter's X-Files. Oh, no, we have an overarching storyline, and we've known all along what we were going to do with all the bees and the smallpox. And you're like, you really don't. You're just pulling it out as you go. But still, it ended up pulling back together the last couple of seasons, and I enjoyed it quite a bit.
It was about the journey, not the destination.
Yeah, pretty much. It was about the characters and the trip, really.
Okay. Here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
Let's do a little science news.
It's time for another installment of Legion of News' Science on the March. This is Science on the March for Friday, July 16, 2010. Here is Dawn Taylor.
Scientists have discovered a cave filled with 15-million-year-old fossils of prehistoric marsupials in the outback, a rare find that has revealed some surprising similarities between the creatures and modern-day kangaroos and koalas. Researchers have unearthed a treasure trove of beautifully preserved fossils from the cave, including 26 skulls from an extinct wombat-like marsupial called the Nimbodon lavaracorum. an odd sheep-sized creature with giant claws.
I'm going to wait until the end here.
The findings were described this week in the Journal of Vertebrate Paleontology.
I read that for the cartoons. They're hilarious.
Discovering such a large cluster suggests the animals may have traveled in mobs or herds like modern-day kangaroos. How the animals all ended up there is a mystery. One theory is that they accidentally plunged into the cave through an opening obscured by vegetation and either died from the fall or became trapped and later perished. The Nimbadon skulls included those of babies still in their mother's pouches, allowing the researchers to study how they developed. The skulls revealed that the bones at the front of the face developed quite quickly, which would have allowed the baby to suckle from its mother at an extremely young age.
Am I to understand that these are giant koala bears? That's sort of what I got from the beginning.
Yeah, they're like sheep-sized koala kangaroo things. They're marsupials, like koalas or kangaroos. But they were the size of sheep with huge, giant claws.
Did they walk upright? Was there any indication about that there? Because now I'm just picturing... Because koala, I think... I don't even know how a koala bear walks.
They climbed trees like koalas do. They think that's why they had the big claws.
How does a koala bear walk? Does it walk on all fours?
No.
I realize I've...
upright? Yes, it does walk on all fours. It kind of... Yeah. Yeah. It's like a panda. It mostly just sits in one place and rolls around, but when it does have... They don't really walk a lot, per se. They climb up and down trees, and then they sleep 20 hours.
If I put one on the ground, though, and said, hey, you gotta go over there, like, it would sort of amble along on all fours.
Yeah.
I'm trying to picture what this animal looked like as it was charging toward you.
It does not walk upright like a man. No.
Okay. All right. I'm just trying to get a picture of the last thing you would have seen as it lunged at you with its razor-sharp teeth. And its cute, sparkling, baby-like eyes, and then proceeded to remove your intestines.
A vicious koala the size of a sheep.
I would give anything just to see somebody savagely attacked by a koala bear. Because those things, apparently they're very vicious.
They're very grumpy.
If they get cornered. Was it you that was telling me that the eucalyptus is a natural sedative?
Yeah, it's a sedative and something of a hallucinogen for them. So it keeps them calm and sleepy and stoned all of the time. Which also helps them keep their metabolism low enough that they can survive on eucalyptus leaves. It's a sort of self-perpetuating system.
That's fantastic. I like the idea that if you were to deprive them of eucalyptus for any demonstrable period of time, that they would just turn unbelievably bloodthirsty. And so then in my mind's eye, it cuts to like a picture of the San Diego Zoo where there's a guy who just runs screaming out of the marsupial enclosure, like just covered in koalas. If I could just see one guy just brutally attacked and, in fact, killed by koalas, and maybe, like, in full motion video or something, I feel like that would then bring an end to all the things I need to do on Earth before I myself perish.
Well, most animals really are not our friends.
No, they hate you.
I saw this video on YouTube a couple of days ago that it was supposed to be really cute. It was a polar bear cub, and it was, like, grabbing this woman's leg and gnawing at her knees, and so it's like, oh, it's adorable. And you're thinking,
it's trying to eat you.
Yeah, it's trying to eat you. It's trying to maul you.
It's just too small
to do it.
It's just figuring out exactly where the size ratio needs to be before it can consume you for its afternoon snack.
Yeah, if that was a full-grown polar bear and it was doing that to a woman, you wouldn't think it was cute at all.
Oh, baby animals and their charming death games.
Researchers have also discovered two previously unknown species of bottom-dwelling fish in the Gulf of Mexico. Living right in the area affected by the BP oil spill.
Hey, look, a brand new creature we've never... Oh, that crap. Never mind.
Researchers identified new species of pancake batfishes, a flatfish rarely seen because of the dark depths they favor.
Now they're just giving military codes as names for new animals.
They are named for the clumsy way they walk along the sea bottom like a bat crawling.
Maybe they're crawling because they're covered with oil and aren't able to function properly.
Pancake batfishes have round, flat bodies with giant heads and mouths they can thrust forward. They use arm-like fins to drag themselves along the bottom, and a modified dorsal fin excretes fluid to lure prey.
Okay.
They sound disgusting. Three species had been considered just one species, but the team found distinct differences. And yeah, they live where the oil leak is.
All right. Well, there you go. Most of nature is disgusting, in fact. All of nature can be divided into three categories. Disgusting and would kill you if given the chance. Or disgusting, would kill you if given the chance, but is tasty enough that we'll risk getting close. So that's it. That's where they all fall. Is that the conclusion of Science on the March?
It is indeed.
There's another installment of Science on the March for Friday, July 16th, 2010. Don't forget, coming up at 1 o'clock, it's the Rick Emerson Show. Today we're going to be talking to Rob and Stacy from Secret Aardvark. We also have today's top five soundtracks far better than the films that created them. Also got a Geek Watch on the way today, a Monkey Watch, and Don Taylor's triple feature. What is the theme of today's triple feature, Don Taylor?
Movies that take place in dreams.
Yeah, movies that take place in dreams. That is all coming up inside the Rick Emerson radio program at 1 o'clock at rickemerson.com. This is Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
A 22-year-old Kansas woman was hospitalized after she was impaled while scaling a fence at a neighborhood pool early Friday morning. Police said the woman was with two other women around 1 a.m. trying to climb over the pool's wrought iron fence. The woman slipped, and two fence rods impaled her thigh. Police spokesman Tim Weaver said the fire department was called and had to cut the fence to free the woman. Part of the fence was still in her leg when she was rushed to the hospital. He said the woman underwent surgery but will recover.
How high off the ground was the fence? Is there a photo? Is there any indication?
I actually saw a news video from the local news crew, and it was one of those like high ones, like about 7 foot high. It's the wrought iron one where it's just like there's nothing to climb up until you get to the very, very top, and there's a bar across the top and a bar across the bottom, and then there's those spiky ornamental bits at the very top.
So this wasn't one of those things where she fell, but she landed close enough to the ground that she could sort of support herself. It was more of for like an hour until the man got there.
No, she climbed up to the top, and it impaled her thigh, and then, as they said here, when officers arrived, she was being physically supported by a friend.
Oh, wow.
Because she was like 7 feet up off the ground.
That sucks.
Attached to a fence.
All right.
They don't actually use the term alcohol was involved in the description here, but they do say... the officers learned the young ladies had been out for the evening and wanted to go for a swim, so they decided to jump the pool's fence.
I think I've connected the dots. One of the greatest photos, and I've got this saved at home somewhere, from a story, he was doing the same thing, but his guy like impaled himself right through the junk. It was the same thing, climbing a fence, except I think it was even better because I believe he was burglarizing a house. and I think he had, in fact, it was like post-tense, I think he had burgled said house and then was trying to make his clever getaway. And it was clever up until the time when he scaled the fence and then managed to harpoon himself right through the unit. And then the cops came by and they said, hang on, there's a guy dangling for the fence. What's that all about? And it was a huge rod, like right through the store down there.
Right.
And it was so deeply satisfying. All right, here's Don Taylor.
A representative of Goodwill store in Miami, Florida, called police Thursday to report an unusual donation. When officers arrived, they found dozens of weapons, including knives, swords, handguns, rifles, and real-looking toy guns that had been donated to the Goodwill. Investigators said some of the weapons were loaded and in good condition. Others were old and rusted. Among the weapons was a rifle made in 1869. It was not known who donated the weapons or where they came from.
Oh, that's fantastic. I like the idea that there was a huge cache of weapons that had just arrived, that just materialized there. Especially because when you drop something off of Goodwill, I think that you have to, like, pull. There's like a little garage area there where you got to, like, back your car around and the guy comes out and he sorts through it with rubber gloves or something.
People do just drop things off, though, and leave them.
That's fantastic. So. That's an interesting, not that I'm suggesting that you do this, that's a really interesting way if you were some sort of a criminal and you had some clothing or something you wanted to get rid of that was linking you to the scene of a crime, you just take that to the Goodwill. They'll never find that because who would ever look there? My God, that's brilliant.
I'm always surprised, by the way, that the criminals do not just dispose of things. And granted, I'm sure they do. I'm sure this is why there are many, many crimes we don't ever hear about. But you'd think that if you were a criminal, I have thought about this many times. You know, I live in an apartment complex that has like six dumpsters.
Yeah.
Go to the next town over. Go to a big apartment complex. Use a dumpster. Trust me, no one is rooting through there.
Yeah.
No one is going to be looking in there.
No, and it will be. But they never do that. They always do it in a place like a block away.
Or the trash can, like, in front of their neighbor's house.
Bob, is this your severed head? No? Okay, well, all right. Yeah, nobody. The thing about it is that most of the people who I think would make fantastic criminals are probably sharp enough that they end up, I don't know, not having to pursue that as some sort of a career, which is to the benefit of everybody. Because I think you and I both know that, I mean, look, if we just decided to become, master villains, tomorrow, I think we'd probably be pretty decent at it. It almost is enough to make you wish that you know that your life was some sort of a choose-your-own-adventure book where you could flag a page, and you go forward and you try going down the dark alley to see what happens, and then if it turns out that there's a Yeti at the end of it, you can actually go back and go to page 46 instead, where you turn and you go into the restaurant.
What's interesting is that because of doing this show here, I started with the Google alerts with different things. And two things I have learned is, one, police all over the country have started using tasers as cattle prods to just make people do things they want them to do. And the other is that every day there are three or four or more cases somewhere in the country of people finding human remains.
Yeah.
Human remains are found just willy-nilly every day all over the place. So there are a lot more people actually disposing of bodies effectively than we are aware of.
Well, I think that most crimes could remain unsolved with just even the barest minimum of effort. I mean, if people really cared enough to put even just a tiny little bit of work in, they could avoid all this going to prison and being killed by the state thing. But
took the time to plan and to think about it.
You know, plan your work and work your plan, friends. That's the way you do it. They say that thing about that there's 37 serial killers working in the United States, like at any given time or something. That was the figure that I was latched onto. And clearly they're doing something right, because I think they only can figure that out because people turn up missing. Not because they're just finding 37 serial killers worth of bodies, like, all the time. So somebody out there somewhere. But then what happens is a guy gets caught and he ruins it for everyone. There's one dumb apple who just spoils the entire getaway method, body disposal method, evidence destruction method, and then everybody else got to start planning from scratch and figuring out what it is they're going to do. Like this thing of taking your clothes to the Goodwill.
Yeah.
Or, the whole thing that everybody learned from CSI about bleaching down your crime scene, which now doesn't work anymore. So,
yeah.
What are you going to do? It's not like the old days. Here's Don Taylor.
Let's do some entertainment news.
Here's your entertainment news for Friday, July 16th, 2010 on Legion of News.
Authorities say Aerosmith guitarist Joe Perry was rear-ended by a car when he was riding a motorcycle, and he's been treated for minor injuries at a Massachusetts hospital. Middleborough police say Perry was on his 2009 Ducati Monster 696 early Thursday afternoon when he was struck from behind by a car driven by 62-year-old Linda O'Brien. Both vehicles were traveling at a low speed. The 59-year-old Perry, who lives in nearby Duxbury, was taken to a hospital and released a couple of hours later.
What is the name of... What, is this a car or a motorcycle?
He was riding a motorcycle.
Okay, all right.
And he was hit by a 62-year-old woman driving a car.
All right.
O'Brien, who was not injured, was cited for following too closely. The accident is not expected to affect any of Aerosmith's scheduled concert dates.
I'm so unclear on the whole Aerosmith thing now, because I thought that there was this thing that had happened a couple months ago where Steven Tyler left. I thought he ditched those guys and it actually announced on stage that he was leaving the group. But then somebody like TMZ or somebody caught him in an airport, and they asked him about it, and he sort of was wishy-washy about it. But then he said later on that he was in fact quitting. But then they were on stage together, so it's just become this entire soap opera that I don't have the energy to follow anymore. All right.
British singer Robbie Williams has rejoined former band Take That to record their first album together since he walked out on them 15 years ago. Williams got back together with the other four members of the successful British band in New York last September, and the album will be released in November. Williams said, "I get embarrassingly excited when the five of us are in a room. It feels like coming home."
Here's the reason he can do that. He can do that because when he left, or was asked to leave, depending on whose version of the story you tend to glom onto, everybody just... It's like when Ozzy left Black Sabbath. It's exactly like that. Everybody just... everybody predicted that Ozzy was just going to end up in a gutter, you know, choking on his own sputum at some point. And nobody thought that Robbie Williams was ever going to amount to anything. And then he went on to sign, I think what is still, and what will probably remain, the largest recording contract in British history. It's like $114 million or something, because he just had, I don't know, like five albums in a row that just sold like a skillion copies. So he can afford to be gracious and go back because everybody was just sort of rooting for his downfall and failure. And,
He's one of those performers that I find him completely delightful in every way, and have never owned a single one of his songs, and probably would not be able to recognize them, you know, if you played them for me.
He's his biggest hit, the hit that he would most be known for in America, is a song called Angels, which was then ruined by, God, who ruined that? I think it was, what's her name, Jessica Simpson. I think she managed to, she managed to defile and the and molest that particular recording into irrelevance. And then he had the other thing he had that sort of approached a hit single here was a song called "Let Me Entertain You," which was great. Had this fantastic video where he was like in Gene Simmons makeup. But in Britain, I mean, I don't. He probably is still very important there. But he was for a while just like the biggest thing on two legs in that whole country.
Yeah, I saw him showing off one of his homes on MTV's Cribs, and he's a guy who really genuinely enjoys being stinking rich.
Oh yeah, yeah. No,
I always admire that.
Well, again, because he was in Take That, which was a really he is sort of like Justin Timberlake in that he defied all the odds to become a boy band singer who then went on to have a successful career as an adult and really and as a career where he does create some really great music, and he's lucky to have very skilled collaborators. But he's a big part of that whole process. But everybody had just written him off. I mean, the tabloids were just, you know, I forget what they had some cheeky nickname for him. I forget what it is, but they were just, you know, counting down the days till he was in a homeless shelter.
Well, he also had some real problems with drugs and
yes.
alcohol. And he was in Stephen Fry's documentary about bipolar disorder, and he talked about how he was eventually diagnosed as being bipolar and realized that the massive amount of coke and booze that he was ingesting was part of an attempt to self-medicate, you know,
himself out.
Yeah, his bipolar, and that now he's on actual medication and much better.
He did a great couple of back-to-back records. He had one called Millennium, and then he had this album called Sing When You're Winning, which was sort of his not a breakthrough record, but it was one of his definitive albums. And he did this thing that anybody else would have been crucified for. He followed up Sing When You're Winning with an album called Swing When You're Winning, which is just him doing nothing but Sinatra covers. With this completely like retro looking album cover and everything, and that he just like knocked it off in like a week and a half because he felt like doing it. And he just, on the one hand, seems to enjoy being really rich, but on the other hand, doesn't really seem to care because he realizes how retarded the whole thing is. So, good for you, Robbie Williams. I salute you.
Pink was rushed to a German hospital after falling out of a harness during her performance Thursday in Nuremberg. The singer, 30, tweeted from the ambulance to tell her fans she would be fine. To all my Nuremberg fans, I am so, so, so sorry to end the show that way. I am embarrassed and very sorry. I'm in ambulance now, but I will be fine, the singer posted on her Twitter
page. She fell out of a harness?
Yes. Apparently she was...
What kind of a program is this?
She later added she had no broken bones and no fluid in her lungs, but was just seriously sore. She's currently on a European tour with stops including Prague, St. Petersburg in Russia, and Helsinki.
Oh, it must be... Okay, so this is... I was wondering what... she must be doing like the thing that Britney Spears did, where it's this sort of... This has become a thing that a lot of sort of dance pop style artists do, where it's this merging of like a Cirque du Soleil thing with then...
So she's doing wire work while she's
stage. When I saw the... Because I saw Britney last year for the circus tour, which was awesome, by the way. I mean, really, hands down, one of the best shows I've ever seen. And she herself, Britney, as I imagine Pink is, Britney's largely irrelevant to the whole thing. I mean, you know, at some point you see like a little, you know, chunky blonde chick kind of spiraling around the stage, but it doesn't really matter. You know, she could be there. She probably vanished for, you know, long stretches of time and I didn't really notice. It was like seeing a less gay Cirque du Soleil with a really loud, fantastic soundtrack underneath it. That's kind of the whole thing.
It's like The Lion King. You're not really there for the story or for the Phil Collins music. You're
No.
there for the giant puppets.
No one is there for the Phil Collins music. No one ever.
You just want to watch the giant kitty puppets and the people holding the gazelles on sticks.
Sure. All right, here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
That is all of your entertainment news.
That's your entertainment news for Friday.
A Central Florida firefighter was shocked by a power line while performing a demonstration for children attending a camp. The incident happened late Thursday afternoon at the Sheriff's Adventure Camp in St. Cloud. Investigators said the firefighter was raising a ladder when it hit a live power line,
kids,
causing him to be shocked.
One of the things you never want to...
The firefighter was alert and conscious and was taken to Orlando Regional Medical Center. There was no word on his condition.
Hey, what if your kite winds itself around a power line? Oh, hello? Can you... Oh, you're not from here, I say, as though I'm from Appalachia. That's a regional reference.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
I'm not
that's
from
a,
these parts.
That's a... we don't take kindly to people who don't understand about rapping. There's... I'll just put it this way. Anybody from the Northwest knows what I was doing just there, except they know that I was kind of doing it wrong. I need to do it this way. I need to go, what if your kite whines around a telephone line? Yes, that's right. You call the fire department. All right. What about frogs? Never mind. I'm just screwing with you now. Go ahead. Here's Don Taylor at the Legion. I'll explain it all later. The Legion of News News Desk.
No children were hurt in the incident, by the way. And
thank God.
They're investigating the incident, but yes.
Let me ask you this. you are, and to be honest, and I don't know, and as Morgan Freeman would say, to tell you the truth, I don't want to know. I don't know your age. I have no idea how old you are. I mean, you're not 12, but you're not 50, so I don't know. You're somewhere between 12 and 50. I am
a handsome woman of an uncertain age.
I have no idea how old you are, so I never really know.
I love that you have never actually asked me, by the way.
I don't know why. It's not like I'm polite or anything. I just don't know why. But see, now it's become this thing that I can't ask because, I don't know, because then now it's built up into this huge thing. And so the asking, yeah. It just seems like it seems wrong because it couldn't be casual at this point.
Yeah, I like keeping it a mystery at this point.
I have no idea how old you are. So I'm not really ever sure where our pop culture, where our Venn diagrams sort of overlap. Where it is that we have the where it is that we have the crossover, you know, the stuff that we watch. So if I did you watch? Did they have Schoolhouse Rock when you were a child? So you watched that. Did they have wherever it is that you're from in Donville, in Dononia? Did they have sort of Saturday morning things telling you not to pick up power lines because it would blow your feet off?
Not really.
Or they just assume kids were smart enough in that era not to do such things?
I think that. I don't know. We may have had those, and I honestly just don't remember them. You know, I don't remember things about. For one thing, also I grew up kind of in the city, so like for one thing, we didn't have to worry about like electric fences around our sheep and things like that. Which I guess.
Where do you think I'm from? Listen, you're in. Okay.
Anything outside of
the
big city
thing,
to
in Portland,
me is farmland.
Here in Portland, nobody has to worry about the electric fence around their sheep. All right?
I will tell you, though.
This isn't Lancaster.
There was quite the educational program that went on when I was in high school. You know how when something horrible happens, and then it's like on all the news, and then everyone has to tell you not to do that? When a guy I knew in high school, he was a year or two younger than me, he and some of his buddies were screwing around in the sewers. He accidentally got a manhole cover dropped on his head.
Oh, wow.
And he died.
Oh,
so,
damn.
So then we went through like several weeks then of very serious discussion about how kids should stay out of the sewers. And I'm just like, it had never even occurred to me to like go in the sewer before this happened.
It's like
now we didn't hear about anything else for like a month.
If you're a kid, I mean, or really, whatever age. If you have to be told to stay out of the sewer, it's like being told, you know, your feces is not a toy. If somebody has to really make that point more than once and past the age of five, you have problems that cannot be helped, and something heavy is going to fall on you at some point because that just seems to be the way your life is trending.
And this was it was totally like the movie Heathers too, because after it was over, a lot of people I knew were saying just how horrible and tragic it was, and how much they really loved him. And all I could think is, like, I knew that guy. He was a dumbass.
He was a dick, yeah. No,
he was a stoner and a dumbass.
The kids who die while they are going to high school are almost always useless. No one likes to say that out loud, but here's the thing. If you are listening to me now and you are a person who is ensconced in the warm, smothering bosom of our public education system, you know this is true. Your school is pointless and most of your classmates are dicks. And there's no getting around that fact. That's just and that's not about, like, high schoolers as such. It's just that most people are useless. 90% of people are just taking up space on this planet. I mean, and about 90%, about half of them are going to end up, menacing you with a screwdriver or breaking into your car at some point. And that's the only reason that you're in school to begin with, is to keep you guys off the streets until you're 18. The state would gladly keep you off the street, like, forever if they could, just as they would have with me. But so when somebody at your school dies, they'll try to tell you that it's a great tragedy, great loss of life. Probably not true. Probably that guy probably going to end up, working at some factory where he just puts the cap on a spark plug, you know. So he's not really missing out. Same thing when I went to school, there was this guy, and I won't. I did this show, I don't know, like some years ago, and I forget exactly how it came up. But I told the story, except I used the guy's name, and I realized later that I kind of felt bad about that. So I will not identify him even by his first name, because it's very distinct. Because it was this is not his name, but it was I used his first name, and it's a name like Zacharias, you know. It's one of those kind of like biblical things, and so there was no missing who that was. But there was a kid that I went to high school with who, you know, just got all liquored up. He was a sophomore or a junior, I think, got all liquored up. Went out, packed him and his friends into like a Volkswagen Golf, just a bunch of moronic dudes out trolling for chicks and more booze, which is fine. I don't have any problem with that, except, you know, they took one of those guys who had been out trolling successfully, I might add, for booze and said, "Hey, Fred, you drive," which just ended poorly. The guy just got filed down like a pencil eraser when that car tipped over. And the best part was, like, the paper of record in Kennewick had on the front just a huge picture of this guy who was in my math class. Huge picture of his bloody shoe in the foreground. All that remained of Zachariah was a bloody Reebok. And it was just like some big, gay, puffy, white, L.A. Gear-looking shoe covered with his something that was inside of him and then was outside. But immediately it became that, like, you know, then he got this page in the yearbook with, like, flowers and hearts. And the guy was just an ass. I mean, he was, like, he was just a dick. He was a dick machine. So, you know, no, he was missed by no one. I'm just going to say that, flat out. Missed by no one. Probably not even his relatives. Here's Dawn Taylor.
A Florida man listed a five-month-old baby for sale on Craigslist for $500, our best offer. He was contacted by authorities.
Did he really say, "or best offer"?
Or best offer. He was contacted by authorities at his home after a woman saw the ad and was horrified.
I wonder what Nancy Grace has to say about that.
If he's still alive, what would be their working theory? Did she sell him?
Authorities traced Joshua Dexter's IP address and were able to locate the 19-year-old. Josh said there was no baby to sell and it was only a joke. He told authorities he was inspired to pull the prank after speaking to a friend who bought their dog, whose name was Baby, on Craigslist. Though Joshua did post a picture of his friend's baby, authorities don't believe any children were actually in danger. He has not been arrested because authorities aren't sure if he's committed a crime.
Okay, we'll just go out on that one right there. The parade of unwashed humanity continues to amuse us. This has been another exciting installment of Legion of News. Thank you for joining us on this Friday. Don't forget, the Rick Emerson Show commences next at rickemerson.com. This program will be available in archived form right here at pdx.fm and also at legionofnews.com, and is available on iTunes as well and on your mobile device at mobile.pdx.fm. Legion of News brought to you each and every weekday by pdx.fm and originates from the studios of the Emerson News Network. At the news desk is Dawn Taylor. Advanced technology and magic provided by Thomas Gill. Executive producer Bruce Agler and chief of staff is Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show begins next at rickemerson.com. Thank you for listening. This has been another exciting installment of
Legion of News on pdx.fm.